Me. Well, good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Peace and blessings. Sound very Anglican. Okay, how are you doing? Well, we're going to crack on with our next verse in the Love series. So let's just get going and straight into it. My verse this morning is this one here. Love is not rude or self-seeking. Now, as we explore this, the King James Version, love is not rude. It translates this verse as love does not behave unseemly. And Paul is simply saying that love avoids all manner of behaving badly towards others. J.B. Phillips, in his translation, he's got a paraphrase version of the Bible, and he says, love has good manners. The root meaning of this word, love is not rude or unseemly, is that love doesn't behave indecently, improperly, disgracefully, or dishonorably towards others. But it treats other people with dignity and respect. Now, we live in a society, don't we, where honoring others is not a high value. The British culture is quite an anarchic culture. Prime ministers are criticized rudely without respect for their position. We don't have to agree with our politicians. We don't have to agree with our prime minister. We don't have to agree with anything anybody says. But it doesn't mean that we actually should disagree and attack them in a manner that is rude, belittling, and aggressive, and without dignity for who they are as a human being and their office. People have feelings no matter who they are. We call police pigs, traffic wardens Nazis. Without respect of the job that they have to do. Can you think the chaos that we would have in our world without policemen? And can you think what it would be like in our towns without traffic wardens? Think of it for a moment. Because we know what we're like. We would be parking in that space without consideration of anything or anything, and the world and our cities and our streets would be crazy. Because fundamentally, we are self-absorbed. And when push comes to shove, we are so reluctant to put other people's needs above the deep feeling of self-preservation that we all carry. So love doesn't do this, but it has respect and honor for the person and the position. It doesn't mean we have to agree with everything, but we do approach people with honor. It's down to the way we talk to people and the way we talk about other people. It's the way that we treat them and the way that we approach them. We can give honor to people, and we can rob honor of people. We can give people self-worth and a sense of self-respect and dignity, and we can rob it from them. Love renounces every attitude, every word, every approach of behavior that does not give respect to the individual. Now, there's a phrase, isn't it? Love is earned. If you want my respect, buddy, you've got to earn it. Do you know that's not really true? It sounds great, but it's not true. Now, I know that to a certain degree, we can earn the admiration and the respect of others. But there is a sense, a baseline respect that we should, and a call to give to one another, whether we've earned it or not. For this reason, You and I are made in the awesome, incredible, wonderful, mysterious image of the living God. You are human. And when God created you in his likeness and in his image, he put within you a basic respect and dignity that reflects something of who God is. And regardless of our position in life or our achievement, regardless of our behavior or somebody's behavior to us, whether we like it or whether we don't, we are human. They are human. And we are all called to approach one another with a fundamental baseline foundation that you are a human being made in the image of God. You are so valuable that I am called upon, because of that truth, to treat you with dignity and respect. Think of the honor that God gave you in these few phrases. Whilst we were yet sinners, God demonstrated his love for us that he should send his son to die. Whilst the clenched fist of our heart and attitude was without apology, full frontal in the face of God, he said, I'm not going to look at the fist, but I'm going to see the value of who you are as a human being, regardless of your behavior, regardless of your sinfulness, regardless of your attitude towards me. And I love you so much that I will send my son to die for you. Such was the prize that God had towards us as human beings. Men and women, boys and girls, no matter who we are. And so love is not rude, because it sees the value in every single person and seeks to mirror this agape love that we've been talking about, this sacrificial love towards each person. So it is true. We cannot say love is respect is earned. It's not. There's a baseline respect that we are called to give to each person. So love treats one another with courtesy and respect. To be rude is to be inconsistent of others. To be rude is to be inconsiderate of others. It is to be offensive and without honor. We can bring dishonor to people by our selfish behavior without realizing it. You know, there's a connection between love is not rude, neither is self-seeking. By being self-seeking, we can dishonor others without even realizing it. Let me give you an example. The binge drinkers abroad can bring dishonor upon a nation. The football supporters can bring dishonor to their own city. Children can bring dishonor to their parents. A Christian can bring dishonor to Jesus or the church. How can we do these things? By being self-seeking. By not giving due consideration to the words that we say and the actions that we perform, the decisions that we make, and the life that we live. We can do that, can't we? Because as John Donne said, man is not an island. Those English students amongst you. Man is no island. It's part of the continent. We are not individuals, no matter how much this Western world wants to put it. We are not created to be individuals. We're part of the human race. We're connected to one body. A wife is connected to a husband to a wife, a family to a child to a family, a parent to a child, a Christian to a body of Christ called the church, an individual citizen to a nation. We're all connected. And our behavior can bring dishonor and honor towards those we're connected to. And so love says, Honor is a wonderful thing, and I want to live this way. It's a challenge, isn't it? Now, we can dishonor people by the way that we treat them. Love cannot justify, under any circumstance, being rude. We cannot say, they deserved what they got from me. It cannot say, you caught me at a bad moment. That's why you had a tongue lashing. Can't say that. Caught me at a bad moment. Love cannot say that. Love cannot say, you made me behave and speak like that. If you hadn't have done that, I wouldn't have done this. Love cannot say that. Love and respect to others is easy when we feel happy and good. But the measure of our character and the work of God's love in our lives is demonstrated when it's not plain sailing. When we're under pressure. When we're hurt and wounded. When we're stressed and fearful. When we're squeezed by life circumstance, what is in us and the measure within us comes out. Jesus said to Peter, Peter, Satan has asked me to sift you like wheat. And Satan wanted to see what was in Peter. And when the squeeze came on Peter's life, self-preservation and disloyalty came to the surface. Peter, in the cozy, intimate, chilled atmosphere of the upper room, where it was safe and secure by the friends, warm and delightful, roast lamb dinner, couple of glasses of wine, he said, I'll follow you everywhere you want me to go, Jesus. I'll even lay down my life for you. Such is my love for you. It's easy to say in the cozy place. But in the cold night of Gethsemane, under the fear of the Roman and the temple guard, under the accusation of Caiaphas, the high priest, when the atmosphere was becoming aggressive, treacherous, and brutal, when the squeeze was on, what came out? So when we find ourselves being rude, dishonorable, not treating others with dignity, let's resist the temptation to say, you made me do this. But actually say, actually, thank you, God, for this challenge, because it has truthfully revealed who I am. And truth is the starting block to change. Truth is the first step to freedom. That you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. When I see the truth, I can say, God, you have put this pressure on, that what is in may come out, so that you can skim it from my life. That I can come to you and say, help me with the power of your transforming love and change me. How many parents have prayed that prayer? Yeah, my hand's up. How many spouses, husbands and wives, have prayed that prayer? I got two hands up. If I had three, they'd be up as well. Because you realize, don't you? After a few months of parenthood and a few weeks of marriage, sometimes it's a few days, you can either have two choices. You can know, oh no, what have I given birth to? Or, oh no, what's in my heart? We can either say, you made me react, or you can say, fundamentally, oh God, there's an opportunity for me to grow in Christ-likeness and really reflect the love of God. We glory in our tribulation, says Paul, knowing that tribulation works patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. If you're praying for patience, expect trouble, because it exposes who you are. And that reality, truth, the Greek word for truth is reality. That reality, that truth, is the first stage of your freedom and transformation. It's so impossible to be so self-absorbed and focused on one agenda and to-do list that we miss the needs of others and we ignore them. So the A-type personality, which is very task-orientated, and I have a sneaking suspicion I'm an A-type personality. I had to go into the office the other day and speak to Chris Lucas, who is our bookkeeper, and I had something on my mind. It was to do with some of the business side of things, and I walked in a Tuesday morning, first thing, went into the office and said, Chris, about this account with Deloitte's, and I was about 3, 4, 5 words into my sentence, and I stopped myself, and I said, stop there. I sat down, I went, how are you? I was just preparing this talk. It's amazing how godly you are before a talk on a Sunday. How are you? And it's so easy to realize that our to-do list, the things we have to get done, can actually be rude because we don't consider the person and we ignore them because of the all well-meaning priorities that we have to get done. The person who's in the middle of a project doesn't realize how the irritation at being interrupted is apparent to others who need their help. The colleague who meets you at a social function doesn't realize how rude it is that they actually don't treat you as a person, as a human being, as a friend, a normal conversation, but just talk to you about business or on their agenda. Politician, we had a meeting here yesterday, and one of the politicians said to us how much he appreciated the church and the cabinet appreciate the church, not cabinet in London, in Swansea, appreciate the church. Because when we have meetings with the cabinet, the church leaders say, how can we help you? How can we serve you? Is there anything we can do to cooperate with you to make this city better? And he says, how refreshing that is, because when most people phone us up, they want something from us. There's even cards that have been written to the councillors to just say we appreciate it's not an easy job. And this particular politician was saying some of my colleagues still have their cards written up on their shelf in their office that had been given over a year ago, treated by human beings, the power of love. And we don't realize sometimes how rude it is when we just approach one another about our business agenda or our gender or the thing we want to get done, and we stop to realize that we are human beings. That can be rude. Basic encounters, a failure to honor one another. Take time to take interest. Okay. There's two areas I think that we can be rude in that I'd like us to just have a little bit of give a little bit of attention to before we move on to the next session. And this is the family. How rude we can be in the privacy of our own home. Familiarity breeds contempt. And I really think that if we're going to demonstrate as a people of God authentic love of Christ, this is where it starts. If we don't get it in the family, it's not going to happen at all. Parents can be rude the way they treat their children. Shouting and yelling. Shouting and yelling is not discipline. It is not discipline. We don't have to shout and yell. Bullying, demanding, and threatening. Yes, there is punishment and reward occasionally in discipline, but that is a difference between threats that are intimidating and bullying. Let us remember, we are the big people here. They are the tiny ones. Can you imagine how frightening it can be when you have a towering person over you, even if you are short like me, towering and shouting in their face, eyes bulging. Aggressive words. Let's not do that. No matter how tired we are. Let's not do that. We've all seen it. Let's not do it. Name calling and belittling. You stupid little whatever. No. We can be rude to our children. And we can dismiss it because we feel it's justified because they've been misbehaving and it's put in the context of discipline. There's no excuse for it. Love is not rude. And the other thing is, oh yes, watch how we treat our partners as well. You probably can't read that. It's not your favourite restaurant anymore, is it? The other thing is when we have to give complaint. Occasionally, we all have to give complaint. To a shop assistant when we take a return back, a politician we might have to make a complaint to. I don't know if you can read this one. This one says, sorry, the Prime Minister is unavailable at the moment. Please leave your expletives after the tone. Teachers, when we're unhappy with a teacher, because they've been mistreating our kids or we feel that our children have been unfairly treated, touch my kids, you die. Yeah, that can be a reaction, can't it? And we forget that, you know, it's not easy being a teacher, looking after your kids, plus everybody else's. Would you like to be looking after 30 kids in the classroom every day for the rest of your life? Think about it. Yeah, I know. Give them a break. A boss can be grieved. A children's worker you don't agree with. They're human beings sacrificing their lives, doing their best. Love is not rude. You enjoying this? Good. Me too. Let's go on to the next one real quick, because I will be able to finish it. Love is not self-seeking. Love seeks the good of others. When Sarah and I first pioneered Cornerstone, many of you know this story, we went through a lot of poverty, as you know, and there were weeks that we just didn't eat at all, and we had porridge to feed the children. That was when it really got bad, and kids would have porridge, and we just wouldn't eat. And we did that several occasions for weeks on end. But there were many times when actually we did have meagre food to eat, and we didn't have a lot, but there was enough to eat, and we could all eat something. But it was only years later I realised that Sarah often would go without eating. I thought she'd eaten, but she would dish something up for me and for the children. And I thought she might have eaten, but she hadn't. But she was actually making sure that I and the kids were fed. And it was only years later I realized. Because love puts others first. Sarah? Thank you. Love is not self-seeking. It considers others, even at great cost or expense. I would like you, just for one moment, to consider the leadership team in terms of the wider leaders particularly. Yes, it's true of the elders, but let's just focus on the elders and the leadership team. Let's just focus on those others. If you know, I'd like to just do this for a moment. You probably don't realise the sacrifice and the inconvenient lives that they have chosen to take on to be small group leaders. When we make decisions together and we're planning things, one of our mottos, you know, we try to do things for the good of the church. The small group leaders try to make decisions for the good of the church. It often means that they have to work their weekends and their holidays and around those events, and they come back early. It often means they have to get babysitters, so they're both there to set a good example of commitment. It often means that we're planning things and putting things in dates where they've got to rearrange things, and it's of great inconvenience to them to order their lives to make sure that actually the whole of the church is served socially, spiritually, pastorally, as a lot goes on. And one of the things that we do at Leadership and seek to do, and I just want to commend the small group leaders as they seek to do this, and they do it, is that when they're making decisions and agreeing to things and we're going for things, it's saying, let's not think how this affects me, but let's ask the question, how this affects everyone else. Because as a leader, my convenience doesn't even come into the picture. I would like you to treat your small group leaders who just don't inconvenience themselves once a week, now and again, but have chosen it as a lifestyle. I would like you to honour them and respect them. And even if you don't agree with everything that is done, just allow your heart to remember they have paid a great price of inconvenience. Their children go to have more babysitters than you would care for. They've paid a great price. Please respect them. Please honour them. And don't take them for granted. Love doesn't seek my needs, but the needs of others. My personal happiness is secondary. What I watch on TV, my personal security, my children's needs above others, my personal advancement. Love is not self-seeking. Love seeks the good of others. You see, it challenges every area of our life, even down to our kids. Yeah, it does. Now, I know as a parent, kids are the apple of your eye. Sometimes there's a decision to make, and we'll favour our children at the disadvantage of others. Isn't that a challenge? If you really want to touch the heart of God in love, forgive me for you guys, because you'll come into it when you're parents. Love works here, but there's a line, and the line is my kids. If you really want to be Christ-like, allow the love of God to even cause you from time to time to say, do you know what? This may be of disadvantage to my kids, but it is better that these kids get the opportunity. I'm not talking about damaging your kids, wounding your kids, tearing the faith out your kids, causing your kids to be damaged by your... You understand what I'm saying? I'm not talking about that. But there are many times when we can put our kids first. We can put ourselves first. But this is why I want to say for you parents, if you can win this, you move into something that touches the heart of God like nothing else. I'll tell you why. For God so loved the world that he gave his son. That other sons and daughters could come in to all that God wanted to give. Whew. You want to be like God? If you want to touch his love, let this thing go deep. Abraham, take your only son. Your only son whom there's so much promise in. Sacrifice him to me. And as Abraham was willing to do that, God stayed his hand. He says, now I know that you love me. Now I know that you have touched love. And because of this, not only will you be blessed, but all the nations of the earth will be blessed through you. Parents, do you think you can let the love of God drill so deep that it touches the apple of your eye? I'm not in one moment suggesting that you disadvantage your children in a damaging way or consistently. But there are moments, and we've all known them, let's be honest now, there's moments when we've all known them when our parental selfishness has made a decision, and sometimes it has been to the inappropriate disadvantage of others. Yeah? Love is not self-seeking. It goes all the way. All the way to the cross. And if we as a church can in wisdom and grace appropriately allow God to work this in us, I think we could see greater blessing for others. Because we become conduits to the power and the presence of God. For the joy that set was before him, Jesus endured the shame. And his delight was to see many sons come to glory. So love is a choice. By nature, it's not self-seeking. And it compels us to choose and live a different way. Isn't it fantastic? Bless the Lord.